Welcome back to another episode of Excalibur CCG TV's comics reviews. Stay tuned. Hey guys, Randy here, joined by
Nathan.
I'm Blake.
Blake, we're back. We made it to another episode.
Yes, sir.
Welcome back. We're going to be taking a look at comics from July 24th, 2013. Now, before we get going, I want to remind you this is going to be kind of a longer episode. If you're on the run, can't listen to us right now, can't watch the show, feel free to click down at the bottom, download the MP3. You can listen to us on the go, in the car, wherever you want to. If you want to see these lovely faces, you can just watch us on our web show. So, last week we took a look at our top three books. We're going to do things a little differently here. We're still fine-tuning the show. We're going to look at our number one books this week, give you guys a little more time to get some more information on what it is that made these books just that great for us. So we'll do that, and also at the end, after the number ones, I've got a little surprise here for the guys. So with that being said, let's jump in here. Let's roll with it.
You know what? I'm going to go ahead and start because I just can't wait.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen you buy it.
My pick of the week, and I'm telling you, I almost missed this book because I didn't see it on the shelf when I went in Wednesday. And so when I went back Saturday, I picked it up. And this is a guy who's just on his own, smooth talker. You know, the art as opposed to the story have a real just flow to him where he's constantly moving and shaking, but he ends up getting
in the book.
Yeah, this is the subscription variant cover of Uncanny. The regular cover that came out looks awesome. Now
yeah, it's number two.
I really believe that this book is poised to be one of the next big books out of Dynamite, but he runs into a female who, obviously, where she's coming from, he gets in over his head in a card game with a guy who just, you know, and he's in a foreign country, and it seems like he has a power to where when he touches someone's flesh, that he can kind of see their memories or, you know, gain something from it.
He kind of has rogue's power
the X-Men. And that's kind of where the title comes from, is that it's kind of an uncanny ability.
Right.
And that's where we get this uncanny from, but at first, we see that it really doesn't maybe care about too much. He really doesn't have many people to care about. So he just moves on from one grip to the next. So we open up in this number two with him losing all kind of money to this big casino owner, thinking that he had him in the pocket. He didn't. And now the goons are after him, okay?
Right.
But he has a mysterious woman. We're starting to see a lot of really great stories coming out and a lot of strong female lead characters coming out, which we'll talk a little bit about that in a little bit.
We will.
But he has this mysterious and also pretty uncanny herself person trying to help him out while these thugs are shooting at him. And he has one chance to really escape this country that he's in, to get away from these guys. And he contacts the best forger. But basically what ends up happening is we have this casino ball slowly closing all the avenues off to where this guy could get away.
Right.
And so the last choice he's left with is to go to a guy who can forge papers for him. And he kind of funnels him in to going to see this guy. And he's like, you know, name your price, anything. I need passport papers. I need to get away. Just do it now. And he's like, well, the price is you. I got family too. You know, and it's like, it was just one of those moments where you're like, man. And then he escapes and he gets away, but I'm going to tell you, I could spend all night talking about this book, but like from the art style to the real noir overtones that are kind of dominating some of my favorite books right now, it's got an ebb and flow where I cannot wait to see what comes out of these characters in this book. It really is an uncanny story, though.
I'm a huge fan of crime comics, and Dynamite is going to give us another one a couple of weeks from, or a month or so from now. And then later on, they're going to give us X-Con by Dwayne Szczerzinski, which I'm totally psyched for because Szczerzinski is an amazing writer. But what I like here, well, actually, the thing that upset me was that those wonderful Packers and Diamond Comics, and if you watch, you know what I'm talking about, damaged just about every single one of the regular covers there of the Sean Phillips cover. I love Sean Phillips' art. I was upset I couldn't get that, and I had to get this cover. I do like this cover, but I love Sean Phillips.
Yeah, I like the other cover too, but in the same sense that at least it's a first print cover. And
yeah.
So,
well, there is that. But I like the fact that this here, Andy Diggle is, you know, taking his strengths, which he was honing on his story arc there in Thief of Thieves, and he's bringing that experience here with that style of comic to Dynamite. I do like what you were saying there. They are funneling him now. They're cutting off every single, and the one choice he ends up making is the choice that he did not want to make. You know, he's like, no, I'm not getting myself involved. It's kind of the typical story that you get where, you know, somebody shows up that is, hey, we need to recruit you to this group kind of thing. You've seen that in other books, but it's well done in this.
Right, obviously, in the establishment of the main character before they, like, launch into the larger story, which I think they're about to do in number three when it drops, and that's setting it up. But there's nothing like a guy who has his mind set on one possible goal, and there's nobody that can stand in his way to get him. And I can't get enough of that, honestly.
So I didn't read the book, but I think one of the things that's really interesting about what seems to be going on in a lot of books we're reading now is that a lot of books have this noir feel without it really being stale in any of the books. I mean, every one of them seemed to be approaching it from just a slightly different angle,
right?
To keep it, you know, sort of fresh. But we're also probably going to get into that a little more in just a minute.
Yeah, a little bit of my criticism would be that Aaron Campbell, while his art is really solid, there are a few points in time where maybe the facial features aren't the best, the strongest, most well-drawn that they could be. It's really nitpicky because his action and everything else in it is top-notch.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a great story. Pick it up. I mean, there's really, like, this is one to watch. I really think it's poised to blow. Now, we'll have to see in the number three, but
I agree. Well, let's move on to my number one here. I'll leave you for last here.
Saving the best.
The Rocketeer and the Spirit, Pulp Friction. Love the play on words there. Number one came out. Of course, this is also a subscription variant. I could not pass up a Darwin Cook cover. Always love his art.
Hey, wait, can I ask you why that all your number ones that you're so excited about, we never ever see in the store? Like,
this guy here got the book. He picked it up. We should still have a copy there. I can snag for you. But with this, what you get is you get Will Eisner's The Spirit mixed with Dave Stevens' The Rocketeer. Both pulp characters. I know this seems kind of redundant for me, especially when I picked a character or a book last week where the character was kind of a version of the Rocketeer. But what makes this book so good is that you have Mark Waid handling the pen here. And he's giving us this, you know, Betty, who is the Rocketeer's girlfriend, is based off of Betty Page.
Yeah.
She was friends with Dave Stevens there. He helped her out in a lot of ways with gaining back her rights to some of the stuff she did. But so that's who this character is based off of. And here she is. She's posing, all this different stuff. And suddenly this character, she finds somebody murdered. Somebody that was supposed to be across the world in the Spirit City and should have been impossible to have flown across the world in the 1940s there and wind up dead. So the Spirit and his crew fly over. You have the classic both sides thinking the other side's a villain, trying to snub Betty and end up uniting there together. The other part of this book that is an absolute treasure for me is that it's Paul Smith on art. And Paul Smith's a classic artist. He did some of the X-Men back in the day. But more importantly, and if you guys haven't checked out the book, check it out. It's so much fun.
Oh, no, I read it.
One called Leave It to Chance that he drew. And James Robinson of Earth 2 was the writer on that. Fantastic art there. That's where I really fell in love with his work. But the thing that's going to make me kind of sad with this book is I don't think that Smith's going to continue as a writer beyond a certain point. I don't know if it was scheduling or something there. Someone else takes over. So it's I'm losing, just as good. Yeah, I'm losing that part, so I'm already feeling some anxiety over that. But just the way that they craft, Wade crafts this story, he throws in terminology all throughout it that's used during that time period, and it doesn't feel like someone who's gone and looked up and found this word and put it into a story. It feels very natural throughout. Oh, absolutely.
I always love when an author's able to pull those little tidbits, ancient lore, you know, or whatever, you know, it is.
I couldn't agree with you anymore. I mean, and it's a perfect, it really is. If you didn't go get that book this week, you need to go get this book.
I'll make sure you get it.
It's the perfect book to be reading this time of year. It's a classic. It's not very heavily burdened with a lot of, you know, overly dark story.
Yeah.
The art, it really does reflect really well the story, and the pacing of the book is really great. But, I mean, this is really Mark Waid's forte.
Well, I mean, putting a pen to paper seems like Mark Waid's forte. Guy is so freaking talented. Another thing about this book, I like that how he's able to connect the two groups of people there, so that it doesn't feel like there's some forced way. It's neat how he does that. The other thing to me is that that's always been kind of strange is you have this guy Cliff who's just kind of a nobody pilot. And he's got this gorgeous Betty as his girlfriend, and you're like, how does this work? And just her reaction at the end with seeing, you know, the stud with the strong jawline, like the spirit, it cracked me up there. Works so well. You can kind of get the picture representation here is a good idea of what goes on or her reaction to the spirit in the book.
It's almost got like a grown-up Archie kind of look to it.
It does, but this guy, if you've checked out DC's New Frontier, he was the one that did the work in that, and he also did the Parker novels. He's the artist on that.
Parker.
So, anytime I see Darwin Cook's work, that's a case, but the work on the inside does not have that feel. It's a totally different one. That classic.
It doesn't look
there.
Like the cover.
Let's all look at it so that they can't see it. Look at that. I love this guy. Looks like the Kingpin there. The Kingpin, if you can't see it, this may actually be an unofficial IDW DC Comics, Marvel Comics crossover there. Who knows? But anyways, the Spirit, the Rocketeer, the Spirit, Pulp Friction, number one, great read.
It was a great read.
Talk to me.
My number one for this week was Wolverine number 8. The title of the story is Mortal, and you discover in this book that shortly after having fought off the villain in the last issue of Wolverine, which was a virus from the Microverse, they've discovered that Wolverine, and he discovers it himself sort of toward the end of issue number 6, that he's not healing. The mutant healing factor is, if not working incredibly slow, not working at all. And in the very beginning of this book, they hit you with it immediately that he does not have it anymore. He does not have the mutant healing power. And somehow the virus degraded his cells to the point that they won't heal anymore.
Yeah.
And pretty much the rest of the book is an exploration of this character and how he would react. And so let me just say this. One of the nice surprises in this book, this is not normally a book that falls in.
Wouldn't he bleed out through his claw wounds?
They show that in there. There are two things I really don't like that seem to happen a lot in with this form of media. One is specific to Wolverine. It feels to me like at least every 3 or 4 years we go through a storyline where somehow his mutant healing ability is either greatly reduced or gone.
That's the only thing that can stop him.
Yeah, and then it also feels like a lot of times when there's a movie released for a comic book, the comic book that's coming out at the time, that title seems to try to mirror what's going on in the movie. And spoiler alert here, even though it's in every trailer for the movie, they address Wolverine possibly being made into a mortal in the movie.
Right.
And that's essentially what happens here. Normally, I find that very labored. I find that when they try to mirror that and it just comes out of nowhere, it feels real forced and it doesn't fit the character. In this one, both of these things work. The storyline works. They approach the story from a much different angle. They show you things like, for instance, right after he really figures out that he can't heal, he doesn't want to shave because he doesn't want to cut himself.
Yeah.
Because he then explains later, he's used to just taking a razor blade and kind of smacking at his face because it doesn't matter if he cuts it.
Right.
And then also later, like you alluded to, and as they kind of show you on the cover, you could see the little blood stains on his hands. He gets attacked by a mugger and he unsheathes his claws. But almost as soon as the mugger goes away, he has to put them back because it hurts so bad to do it. They show him getting drunk, whereas anybody that reads this book knows that the kind of constant is you see him stumble around with a bottle because he has to get close to alcohol poisoning to feel anything. And then they do another beautiful little scene. We all know that in these universes where these characters live, a lot of people die, and then they just come right on back in a couple of issues. And one of the characters they have not done that with is Nightcrawler. And he's been dead for quite some time and there doesn't appear to be any storylines where he's coming back. None that you can see from the book.
Not from that, but from San Diego Con.
Sure.
That happens.
And so in this issue, he goes and visits the statue of his friend and acknowledges that for him, if there's a good possibility that if he died, it would be forever if he remains in this condition. Now, we all know that for this book to continue in the way that it does, they'll have to get over this. But
2014 is being called the death of Wolverine. So,
but it'll be interesting to deal with this character as a breakable human being when so much of how the Wolverine acts is based on his knowledge that if you hit me, shoot me, blow me up, try to drown me, I'm probably going to make it through it. So I can just come at you full force.
He's kind of a juggernaut.
Wolverine, this is happening like back in the day with the death of Superman thing. You know, it's like when you create a character that is so powerful, then how do you stop them, you know, besides taking away one of their powers? You know what I mean? And Wolverine is one of Marvel's biggest characters. So, like, I'm really wondering what you're saying in 2014 if they're going to kill him off, if that's like their death of Superman thing, or...
Well,
is he going to stay dead?
It's going to be something that happens. I mean, you've seen with Superman, you've seen with Batman, Captain America, whoever else there. They've killed off major characters there. It's only for a period of time. To me, my thing is, kind of like you, if it's done in a way like with this book that it's believable, that you can see that it happens, that it has this purpose other than being... a little ploy to boost sales.
And maybe let me clear it up here. So for me, the thing that makes this interesting is it's not just the loss of a power. It's that recklessness is ingrained in Wolverine's personality. The power is not what makes him reckless. He's a reckless individual who just happens to be able to live through his own recklessness.
You're talking about years of ingrained reckless behavior.
Right. And so,
I mean, he's been around for so long.
To explore how that would change his personality as it not just a hero,
like
but as a human being.
Huge shock.
Yeah, I mean, for a while there, it almost takes you back. He appears almost cowardly about living because now he knows I can't go out and get hit by a car and get up and walk away from it.
Right.
It's just a really good read. If you're not reading Wolverine, this may be the time to hop on. Apparently, big things are in store.
Right.
Well, you know what? I just want to say before we get off here, because that's a great concept they're exploring with this character, is that I haven't seen the movie yet, but I want to, so don't tell me about it. But, you know, in the trailer they say, what if I could make you mortal? And I was like, okay, well... Then he's like, well, yeah, that sounds like a great idea because I've been around for a long time. Sure, had a lot of pain, you know. And then, you know, once they do take his powers and he unsheathes the claws and he bleeds out of them or whatever, and it's like, maybe that wasn't such a good idea. You know what I mean? Maybe I should have just kept the course here. But
with this book, Paul Cornell is a strong writer, a very good writer. I think kind of an underestimated writer in a lot of ways. And so the first story arc of Wolverine really came with some mixed reviews. A lot of people were saying, I don't understand what's going on. This, you know, this is not very clear. And it really, to me, I was kind of shocked. And so I guess he had this story where he wanted to get to this point. And this point right here was really his story he had mapped out and planned out to tell. That first part, maybe it was just like, let's find the way to get here. But I like to hear that, you know, a character as popular as Wolverine is now kind of back on track with the writing on the book. I can't wait to see Alan Davis get back on the art, because that's one of my top favorites. Well, that's our number ones here. Now, here's a little treat that I was going to throw in. We all three read one book this week that, to me, I think we all had a different kind of look at what we thought of the book. So I wanted to kind of get everybody's two cents on Lazarus number two. For me, it's Greg Rucka, who has a history of writing some of the most powerful women in comics and novels. He's given us Queen and Country. He's given us both Sasha Bordeaux from Batman and Batwoman in Batman comics, and he's just gone through time after time giving us these characters where he's, you know, he blows us away. He doesn't give us the damsel in distress, the woman who can't do us. He gives us the toughest nails, the I'm going to put the pain aside and get done what I need to get done kind of book. And we saw that character in the first issue. But the first issue also was real introductory, mm-hmm. and maybe left out a whole lot of the plot just to kind of give us an idea of what we're looking at with this character.
Well, you know what? I don't mean to cut you off. No, but, go ahead. But I think the first issue kind of set up a mystery of, like, who is this person that can take a shot to the dome, like a bullet to the head, and then get up and still come after you?
Right.
Like somebody like Wolverine would be able to do. But with the Lazarus 2, I think it broadened, and like this is I'm not gonna say the name of the other title I'm thinking of, because I'm gonna probably choose it for my number one next time it comes out. But this book is another one of those books where we're seeing like some kind of apocalyptic thing happening, and then families coming into power based off of, you know, what they're able to control. And with this, her name is Forever Carlisle. She's of the Carlisle family.
Right.
And
she's of.
Yeah. Like we say of the Carlisle family, but she's I'd say is probably close to engineered to be right. their ultimate protector and
right.
strong arm.
Right.
But let me tell you, like back earlier what I was saying, that we each kind of have, we like the same stuff, but then again, in our really true interest in comic books lies all in a slightly different angle of the medium, which I think is cool, you know, that comes together to show. But in this one, I like books that don't hold my hand, that let me think between the lines, you know,
right.
read between the lines and see all the little nuances. And this book, to me, they're letting me be intelligent here. You know what
That's
I mean?
That's a great
I'm,
way
I'm,
of putting
I'm
it.
I'm able to read this book. They're not saying, hey, bullet point A, B, and C, just so you know. You know, it's like,
right.
I'm intelligent enough to get it.
No,
and, like, they're not holding my hand. This is a great book. And, like, I almost picked it for my number one.
Yeah.
But, like, with the uncanny stuff, I just love the smooth talkers. But more on it, I mean, like, what'd you think, Nate?
The reason it didn't make it into my number one is, well, really, there are three reasons. Okay, first, it's really difficult, I think, for you to write a number two book that's going to be able to stand alone. And when I make these recommendations, I want the viewer, you, to be able to go and get this book and pick it up and start reading it.
Sure.
And I don't feel like you can do that with Lazarus 2. I feel like you have to have Lazarus 1 to make this make any sense
sure,
at all.
Sure.
I also feel like this is not a book where you can sit down, gloss through it in 10 minutes, and be done with it, because it does require you to be intelligent. It does require you to kind of think about what the characters are saying, think about the dynamics
right.
that are
I mean,
going
you got,
on.
I mean, you got body language and still panels. I mean, all this stuff, and it's like, she's really good looking, but at the same sense, this really great power that she has within her. And she,
when
she,
I was,
you know, it's
when
like,
I was
really
done
great.
With this book, to me, one of the great, one of the indicators you've read a good comic book is you want to have that other comic book right
there,
right. And I did want that, but I wanted it for the wrong reason. They had done all the good setup work in the first book. They had done a fantastic job in this book of fleshing out the world that you got introduced to in the first book.
Sure.
But to me, I just wanted some more of Forever Carlisle doing
well,
some
it
more.
It sounds like they're doing their job
really,
as comic book writers.
Well, the things that I see happen, I like that the father of the family maybe is not such a bad person as what the kids are, kind of like,
no, the
like one in the
just,
Jupiter's
the one
Legacy.
Kid is just terrible.
You have Forever that is eventually it's going to happen where she's going to break free of whatever this, you know, even though she's engineered to be completely faithful, she's going to break free from this because she will find out what's going on to her. It has that weird taboo kind of the thing between the brother and sister that's weird, but it's one of those things you're like, you know why Forever's there, you know why she's there, but what she's there for can't possibly happen. You know, these two characters are way too interesting to see just like taken off the board immediately.
Like you said, the characters are so interesting. And what he's talking about, if you haven't read this book, I really recommend you pick it up. I'm going to tell you why.
Me too.
Because
this guy too.
Yeah, it's
this book, like I said, is based on like something happening to where certain families, and not a whole lot of them, come into power. And the Carlisle family is one that controls this agriculture. And they own territory just like the other families do. But basically, our main character is Forever Carlisle, and she's their enforcer, but she's genetically engineered to be completely loyal to the family.
Right.
All
right.
So what's so interesting is that we have kind of like the father who's getting older and calls a family meeting. And we get introduced to some of the other Carlisle family members. And one of them is the brother and sister who they're kind of out like old, what is it, Los Angeles direction.
Yeah.
And they're getting into some trouble that probably the father wouldn't approve of. And they don't think he knows about it. But, you know, of course, our fathers aren't as stupid as we ever think
they
are.
Right.
You know, and what is so cool is that, you know, I don't want to get in too much because if you do, I really want you to pick up the book and read it. It's really great. But is that he calls a family meeting, and they make it, like, of a great importance. Like, it doesn't happen every day. They don't get together
right.
every Sunday
right.
for dinner.
No.
You know, when they
he
call a family meeting, you show up.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? And that's what was so cool is that when he dismissed, because the son is really unruly, and you can obviously see he's waiting for his father to die.
Oh,
right. You know what I mean?
He's going to make the power move. He's totally Jeffrey from
right.
Game of Thrones.
Right.
Totally.
Yeah, but he's just ready for him to die so he can just take over and really screw up everything that his father
did. Oh, yeah,
doing.
No, that's
but really, like, when the family meeting's over and he asks Carlisle to stay, and she's really...
Forever.
Like,
yeah,
yeah forever. And they when he asks her to stay, and the guy, you know, it's really always the guilty who are always shouting, like,
sure,
you know what? And then that's kind of what happens is he's kind of like, you know, and it's really, we realize that this,
and you,
this
you
the
get
father
the sense
is a real powerful guy, you know.
Forever is not just their Lazarus, which is what they call, apparently every, it, you get the sense
every
family
has
this
Lazarus.
Lazarus.
Yeah.
And I think we
and,
need the other family's Lazarus here in this.
And so, and
okay.
you,
that's
yeah,
there you go.
And so
that's
you,
the,
but you get the sense that he does not like his sort of naturally created offspring as much as he likes Forever.
I agree with that.
And they sense that as well and despise the fact
well,
that...
Well, dude, the one scene where he gave Forever a command, and, you know, she's supposed to obey the Carlisle family, and she didn't say, like, you know, she... And he's like, the only way that she couldn't give me that information was if Father ordered her not
right.
to. And that was like... This is going to be
so
good.
No, they
you know
mean,
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Guys, we could keep on talking about this. I don't want to
pick
don't
up Lazarus.
2 year off. Yeah. We're going to continue talking about this after we end the show, obviously, because it's so intriguing. Before we go, I just have to say, I wasn't able to talk about it. Clone number 8, that's a good one to check out that came out this week. Clone is a solid, solid story. Also, Young Avengers number 8 came out. Do you have any other ones that you'd recommend for people?
Man, Thumbprints are it's really good. It's got another strong female lead. I'm looking at that one. I'm really liking this comic that came out last week, Blood Brothers. If you don't know anything about East of West Saga or Thief of Thieves, you're doing yourself a disservice. And I really like, I don't know if I'm in a code here, but I cannot wait for this new Sandman miniseries coming out with Neil Gaiman. Like, I'm right. So psyched for that.
The
other good reads?
Superior Spider-Man. You need to go ahead and hop on that. That's a good read right now. Crow Curare, if you're into horror comics, it's a really interesting story.
Justice Gods Among Us.
One that I didn't pick up, but after him talking to me about it, that was a pretty interesting.
It's really interesting. And then out of the Mignola-verse, another sort of twist horror-type comic, but it's not really. It's Lobster Johnson. That's a good, good one. Son of a Lotus. Also good. Also a noir book. Those are the ones I'd say out of all the material that I picked up this week. If you didn't go get those, you should hop down to the store and try to grab them now.
I just want
to
throw out one more title. I'm going to give it back to you. I picked up a book. It was the last one on the shelf. It was called Ballistic. I cannot wait to see where this book goes. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay. Sounds good. Good recommendations all around here. If we've entertained you, if you have liked the show, feel free to press like, to share, to subscribe with us if you're not already subscribed. Tell other people about us. We want you to respond, to tell us, you know, yeah, I agree. Hey, this was a great one that you didn't review to
you
check
guys
out.
Suck.
Something like that. I really don't want to hear that. if you think that, please go watch somebody else's. You know, maybe they'll float your boat. But we're from Excalibur Comics here in Shreveport, Louisiana. And in Texarkana as well, it's Excalibur Comics, Excalibur CCG.com, where you can find us, or our channel is Excalibur CCG TV. Feel free to get in touch with us. As I said earlier, I'm Randy.
I'm Blake.
I'm Nate.
And we will see you next week.